Welcome to Saving Castles, the podcast for castle and chateau enthusiasts. Join us as we explore the fascinating history, stories, and culture of these awe-inspiring structures, from the legends and folklore to the latest in restoration. We'll cover it all, so whether you're a seasoned castle aficionado or just discovering the magic of these magnificent buildings, this is the podcast for you. So grab your headphones and let's dive in.
The Tower of London, a fortress rising majestically on the northern bank of the River Thames, is an emblem of the tumultuous history of England. Its imposing walls have been silent witnesses to nearly a millennium of drama and intrigue. Built by William the Conqueror in the 1070s as a show of strength, the tower was originally a symbol of oppression, meant to dominate the London skyline and remind the subdued Londoners of the might of the Normans. Imagine, if you will, the early days of the tower. The year is 1078, and as the gravestones are laid one by one, the enormity of the project is evident to all who watch. The Conqueror's Tower was not just any building, it was a statement. In its shadow, medieval London appeared almost meek. The sounds of construction were punctuated by the whispers of locals, murmuring both in awe and fear. Many wondered if this monumental citadel would be a protective guardian or a grim jailer. Yet, even as the Tower of London's primary purpose was military defence, it rapidly evolved into a royal residence, a treasury for the crown jewels, and most ominously, a prison. A prison not for common thieves or murderers, but for those whose very existence or ideologies posed a threat to the royal status quo. The walls of this fortress, so cold and indifferent, absorbed every cry of despair and every plea for mercy. The tower has known both the laughter of kings and the tears of princes. It has heard the joyous proclamation of heirs, born and the mournful tolling of bells for those executed. One such tale, buried in the tower's earliest annals, is that of Ranulf Flambard, appointed by William the Conqueror's son, King William Rufus. Ranulf was the king's chief tax collector. Clever, ambitious, and unscrupulous, he was England's first recorded prisoner in the tower. Not for treason or murder, but for his extortionate methods of extracting money for the king's coffers. His incarceration, however, was as dramatic as his escape, for after feasting his guards with wine, he managed to slip away using a rope, leaving behind an empty cell and tales of his audacity. As the years flowed on like the river it overlooks, the tower's purpose transformed with each successive ruler. What remained constant, though, was its role as the backdrop to the nation's most compelling dramas. Take a moment to visualize the countless souls who crossed its drawbridge, not as free men and women, but as prisoners. Some knew they would never leave, while others held on to flickering hope. And as they stepped onto the grounds, the enormity of their fate became clear. They were now ensnared within the very heart of royal intrigue. In the heart of the fortress stands the White Tower, its white stone gleaming ominously in the sun. This central keep, the oldest part of the tower complex, serves as a stark reminder of the structure's original intent, domination and defiance. Even now it dares onlookers to uncover its secrets, to delve into tales of treachery and betrayal. To walk its halls is to journey through the very annals of English history, to hear the echoes of bygone eras, the desperate prayers whispered in the night and the soft cries of those who met their untimely ends within. It's said that to know the tower is to know England itself, for within its walls lie tales that shaped a nation's destiny. Let us, dear listener, embark on this journey together as we peel back the layers of time and explore the shadows of royal intrigue that forever haunt the Tower of London. In the vast tapestry of tales that emanate from the stone-clad walls of the Tower of London, few are as hauntingly enigmatic as the legend of the ghostly archer. To truly appreciate this ethereal spectre's tale, we must voyage back in time to the era of the Norman Conquest, a period that not only shaped the destiny of England, but also bore witness to countless personal tragedies. The year is 1066. The Battle of Hastings is concluded, and William, Duke of Normandy, stands triumphant, having secured his claim as King of England. The new ruler's reign was marked by fierce resistance from the Anglo-Saxons, many of whom loathed the foreign invader. As the Normans sought to assert their dominion, tensions mounted, culminating in numerous uprisings, conspiracies, and open rebellions. It is during these turbulent times that our story finds its protagonist, a young French nobleman named Henry de Beauvoir, with flowing dark locks, a statuesque build, and eyes that glittered with both ambition and a youthful naivete. Henry was the quintessential Norman knight. Loyal to King William, he had been part of the conquest, displaying both valiance and brutality on the battlefield. However, as the tale suggests, Henry's fate would be irrevocably altered not by a grand battle, but by an illicit love affair. The lady of his affection was none other than Lady Eleanor, a beautiful Anglo-Saxon heiress whose family had been dispossessed by the Normans. Their love, born amidst the backdrop of conquest and subjugation, was destined for tragedy. It wasn't long before whispers of their secret rendezvous reached the ears of the Norman court. A Norman nobleman and an Anglo-Saxon lady, such a union was not just frowned upon, it was political dynamite. Eleanor's family, it was rumored, were plotting to use the relationship to reinstate their claim on lands taken by the Normans. Henry, torn between loyalty to his king and a love that consumed him, was summoned to the Tower of London, an edifice that was swiftly gaining a reputation as a place of imprisonment and doom. As Henry languished in the cold, damp confines of his cell, his thoughts were consumed by visions of Eleanor. He imagined her, wrapped in her silken gowns, wandering the green meadows of her ancestral lands. Despair, like an ever-tightening noose, began to grip him. In a desperate bid for freedom, Henry devised an escape plan. Using a makeshift rope crafted from torn bedsheets, he planned to scale the walls of the tower. The night chosen for his escape was a moonless one, with a thick fog characteristic of English winters serving as a cloak for his endeavors. However, the tower, with its vigilant guards, was no easy fortress to flee. As Henry began his descent, the silhouette of an archer emerged from the mists. A single arrow was loosed, finding its mark in the young nobleman's heart. Henry's lifeless body was discovered at the break of dawn, the mist that had promised him refuge now eerily swirling around him. But as the legend goes, the tower had claimed more than just his mortal life. It had ensnared his very soul. To this day, on fog-laden nights, many claim to witness the phantom form of Henry de Beauvoir still attempting his doomed escape. The ghostly archer, as he has come to be known, serves as a poignant reminder of the personal tragedies that unfolded amidst the larger canvas of his story. So, the next time you find yourself near the Tower of London on a misty evening, cast your gaze upwards. Perhaps you might glimpse a shadowy figure descending its walls, forever trapped in his eternal quest for freedom and love. In the pages of England's history, few figures shine as luminously or burn as tragically as Anne Boleyn. The second wife of the notoriously fickle king, Henry VIII, Anne was the magnetic force that transformed the religious landscape of a nation. Yet, as the Tower of London's brooding walls could attest, she would become one of its most sorrowful spectres. The daughter of ambitious nobles, Anne was, from her youth, destined for great things. Educated in the sophisticated courts of the Netherlands, France, and Archduchess Margaret's realm, she returned to England a woman of charm, wit, and intellect. It was no wonder that the king's roving eye soon fixed upon her. However, to truly fathom Anne's tragic tale, we must first understand the turbulent waters she navigated. England, under the rule of Henry, was in religious and political upheaval. The king's desperate quest for a male heir had led to his historic split from the Catholic Church. His desire for Anne and her tantalizing promise of sons only fanned the flames of this monumental rift. Their courtship was the stuff of legends, love letters, secret trysts, and passionate promises. But with Anne's eventual coronation as queen, the fairy tale began to unravel. The birth of a daughter, the future Queen Elizabeth I, was a joyous event, yet it cast a shadow on Anne's position. Henry's impatience for a male heir, coupled with courtly machinations and Anne's own fiery disposition, soon led to her downfall. Whispers of treachery, infidelity, and witchcraft began to circulate the court. These murmurs, whether born out of truth or vile fabrications, were weapons sharper than any blade. And in 1536, they culminated in Anne's arrest and imprisonment in the Tower of London. Imagine, if you can, the stark transformation of her reality. Just days prior, she was the queen, residing in palatial chambers, her voice echoing with power. Now, she was a prisoner, confined within the tower's cold, unyielding walls. The very same tower she had entered years before, to a chorus of trumpets and cheers, heralding her coronation, now loomed over her as an ominous jailer. As days melted into nights, Anne's spirit remained unbroken. Letters and accounts from her time of imprisonment hint at her resilience. She fervently denied all accusations against her, penning heart-wrenching pleas to her husband. In one such letter, she wrote, "I am as innocent of all the charges against me as God is of all wickedness." Yet destiny, it seemed, had scripted a cruel ending for Anne. Her trial, largely seen by historians as a sham, led to her conviction, and on May 19, 1536, the unthinkable occurred. Anne Boleyn, Queen of England, was executed within the very walls of the tower. But if the tales that reverberate through the centuries are to be believed, Anne's connection with the tower didn't end with her mortal demise. Many a visitor has claimed to witness a spectral figure wandering the corridors of the White Tower. A lady, they say, dressed in Tudor finery, her head held high with regal grace, but held not on her shoulders, rather tucked beneath her arm. Anne's restless spirit, legend claims, roams the tower grounds, especially near the chapel of St. Peter at Vincula, where her remains were interred. There in the stillness of twilight some have heard the soft strains of a lute or the melancholic verses of a song, forever echoing the sorrows of a queen betrayed by fate and love. Anne Boleyn's tale serves as a poignant reminder that power, love, and betrayal are interwoven threads in the fabric of history. In her lonely walks, the Tower of London cradles not just the memory of a queen, but the undying echo of a woman whose life was as captivating as her tragic end. In the shadowed annals of the Tower of London, certain stories resonate with such profound emotion that they become emblematic of an era. Among these, the mysterious and poignant tale of the princes in the tower stands as a somber testament to the treacherous dance of power and the vulnerability of innocence. The year is 1483. King Edward IV, a powerful and charismatic monarch, has passed away, leaving behind a kingdom on the brink of turmoil and two young sons, Edward, the 12-year-old heir apparent, and his younger brother Richard, aged 9. Both boys, with the weight of royal legacy upon their slender shoulders, are thrust into a perilous world of political intrigue. Their uncle, Richard, Duke of Gloucester, was appointed as their protector. However, as the mists of time would suggest, his intentions were far from benevolent. It wasn't long after their father's death that both princes were ensconced within the imposing walls of the Tower of London, ostensibly in preparation for young Edward's coronation. Yet, as days turned into weeks, the grand ceremony seemed perpetually postponed, and the princes were seen less and less. The tower, which had previously been a royal residence and a symbol of majesty, soon transformed into a gloomy prison for the two young souls. Those fortunate enough to catch a glimpse of the boys reported seeing them playing innocently in the gardens, perhaps unaware of the ominous plots that were unfolding around them. Rumours began to circulate through the cobbled streets of London, whispers of betrayal, of a power-hungry uncle seizing the throne for himself. And as Richard of Gloucester was proclaimed King Richard III, the darkest and most chilling of all rumours emerged, that the young princes had been murdered, their fragile lives snuffed out to clear the path to the throne. The prince's disappearance remains one of history's most poignant enigmas. Were they smothered as they slept? Were they betrayed by those they trusted? The cold stones of the tower guard their secrets jealously, leaving us to speculate on their tragic fate. In the centuries that followed, tales of ghostly apparitions began to emerge. Guards and visitors alike reported seeing two small, shadowy figures, hand in hand, their faces pale and eyes filled with sadness. They would be seen in the dim light of dawn, or as dusk draped its cloak over the tower, their ethereal forms flitting through the rooms and hallways, forever searching, perhaps, for an escape from their tragic fate or for the loving embrace of their lost mother. It wasn't until 1674, almost 2 centuries after their mysterious disappearance, that a chilling discovery was made. Workers, while renovating a section of the tower, stumbled upon a wooden box buried beneath a staircase. Inside were the skeletal remains of 2 children. The heartbreaking find was assumed to be the earthly remains of the lost princes, and they were subsequently interred in Westminster Abbey, finally given a resting place befitting their royal status. Yet their story remains a testament to the brutal lengths to which ambition can drive a person. It's a tale that underscores the fragility of innocence amidst the cruel games of power. It serves as a haunting reminder that behind the grand narratives of history there lie personal tragedies, stories of lives cut short, and futures cruelly stolen. The tale of the princes in the tower is not just a historical mystery. It's a narrative of lost innocence, of the ruthless machinations of power, and of 2 young boys who, in their tragic fate, became eternal symbols of the heartbreak and treachery that can lurk within palace walls. So, as you tread the ancient grounds of the Tower of London, spare a thought for young Edward and Richard. And if the wind carries a soft sigh or the walls seem to echo with the distant laughter of children, remember the princes and the heart-wrenching tale that forever binds them to the tower's shadowed history. In the tapestry of British monarchy, many threads tell tales of tragedy and ambition, but few are as poignant as the story of Lady Jane Grey. The 9 Days Queen, as she would be remembered, represents the relentless fragility of power and the heartbreak that often accompanies it. Jane was born into nobility, the great-granddaughter of Henry VII. Her lineage was undeniably regal, yet nothing in her early life foreshadowed the heavy crown she'd one day bear, if only briefly. She was an erudite young woman, fluent in Greek and Latin, with a fervour for religious scholarship. Her profound intellect was recognised and admired, with many considering her one of the most learned young women of her age. However, as fate would have it, her intelligence would not be the legacy for which she'd be remembered, but rather her tragic ascension to the throne. In 1553, the young, sickly king, Edward VI, lay on his deathbed. Fearing the Catholicism of his half-sister, Edward named Jane, as his heir, bypassing his 2 half-sisters, it was a move laced with political manoeuvring, a ploy to ensure Protestantism's continued reign in England. Upon Edward's death, 16-year-old Jane was thrust into a role she neither sought nor desired. With a mixture of reluctance and duty, she accepted the crown. However, the weight of this new responsibility, both literal and symbolic, was evident. Accounts from the time detail a coronation where the crown, too heavy for her young head, was nearly toppling, an eerie foreshadowing of events to come. But England wasn't ready for this abrupt shift in the line of succession. While Jane held the title, Mary, Edward's half-sister, amassed an army. Just 9 days after Lady Jane's reign began, it ended. She was imprisoned in the Tower of London, the very place where her reign began in a swirl of silks and ceremonies, now her sombre cage. The tower, with its sprawling grounds and historic walls, has been a silent witness to countless tales of ambition and downfall. Yet, Lady Jane's story is one that even its stones would weep for. This young woman, whose dreams perhaps comprised scholarly pursuits and religious devotion, found herself a pawn in a perilous game of political chess. Her imprisonment was, in itself, a tragedy. But the final blow came when she was sentenced to death, a casualty of the larger battle for the throne. The scene on that cold morning of February 12, 1554, is one of heart-rending sorrow. As the tale goes, blindfolded and distressed, young Jane had to grope for the execution block, a chilling testament to her untimely and unjust end. Yet, even in death, Lady Jane's spirit refused to be quelled. For centuries, visitors to the tower have reported seeing a young, ethereal woman in Tudor-era clothing, gazing sorrowfully out of the windows or wandering the grounds, lost in thought. Many believe this to be Jane, her spirit forever tied to the place of her greatest triumph and most profound tragedy. The story of Lady Jane Grey is one that challenges the grandeur of monarchy. It's a haunting reminder of the human lives that often become collateral in the power plays of the ambitious. Jane wasn't just a queen. She was a young girl with dreams, aspirations, and a profound intellect that was never allowed to flourish fully. So, when one walks the corridors of the tower amidst its grand history and myriad tales, it's essential to remember these personal stories. For it's in these intimate narratives that the true essence of the past lies, and Lady Jane, with her brief reign and lasting legacy, remains an embodiment of the personal costs of political ambition. In the enduring echoes of her story, the Tower of London stands not just as a symbol of power and history, but as a monument to the lives shaped and often shattered within its formidable walls. Of all the entrances into the Tower of London, none are as hauntingly evocative as the Traitor's Gate. An archway submerged in the chilly waters of the River Thames, it has seen countless souls pass through, many never to emerge again. It remains a symbol of betrayal, despair, and the somber finality that awaited so many who dared challenge the will of the monarchs. Imagine a time when London's rivers were the primary highways, bustling with boats ferrying goods, people, and news. The waterways were alive with shouts, the creaking of wooden boats, the soft lapping of the water against ancient stone. Yet among these daily sounds, occasionally, a silence would fall, a silence punctuated only by the muffled oars of a single boat heading purposefully towards the ominous arch of the Traitor's Gate. For the passengers aboard these vessels, the journey was more than just physical. It was a descent into an unknown future, a voyage from the world of the living into the shadow of potential death. Many of those ferried through the gate were accused of treason, their fates uncertain, but their reputations forever tainted. The gate itself, originally known as the Watergate, was constructed between 1275 and 1279 on the orders of Edward I. It was designed as a new and more impressive entrance to the tower, reflecting the power and grandeur of the monarchy. However, as the political landscape of England became more tumultuous, the gate soon began its transformation into the infamous Traitor's Gate. Sir Thomas More, a man of faith and the author of Utopia, was one such notable figure to make the grim passage through the Traitor's Gate. Accused of treason for his refusal to acknowledge King Henry VIII as the supreme head of the Church of England, More's journey through the gate marked the beginning of his end. His silent boat ride was not just a transition from freedom to imprisonment, but a passage from earthly convictions to immortal martyrdom. Then there was Anne Boleyn, whose earlier entrance to the tower was one of hope and celebration, but who later returned through the Traitor's Gate, a fallen queen facing her tragic destiny. The once adored second wife of King Henry VIII, Anne's final voyage through the waters of the Thames, symbolized her rapid and heart-wrenching fall from grace. Over the years, countless others followed the same path. Aristocrats, clergymen, and even commoners who had, in one way or another, incurred the wrath of the reigning monarch. Each individual who passed through the Traitor's Gate carried with them their stories, fears, hopes, and an overwhelming sense of the uncertain. It said that on silent nights, if you stand close to the now rusty bars of the gate, you can hear soft whispers, echoes of the past, fragmented conversations of those long gone. Some even claim to have seen ghostly apparitions, spectral boats gliding noiselessly through the water, ferrying phantom passengers into the awaiting embrace of the tower. Today, the Traitor's Gate stands as a solemn reminder of the power struggles and personal tragedies that have shaped England's history. While the turbulent waters of politics and ambition have often led to betrayal and treachery, they have also crafted tales of indomitable spirit and unwavering conviction. So, when you next find yourself on the banks of the River Thames, gazing at the weathered stones of the Traitor's Gate, take a moment to reflect. Think of the souls who once passed through, the stories they carried, and the indelible mark they left on the annals of history. For in their stories lies a testament to the human spirit's ability to endure, even in the face of the greatest adversities. Amid the pantheon of luminaries that once graced the English court, few shine as brightly, yet as controversially, as Sir Walter Raleigh, a Renaissance man in every sense. Sir Walter Raleigh's introduction to the Tudor court was nothing short of meteoric. With his charismatic persona, he quickly endeared himself to Queen Elizabeth I. Rumour has it that upon spotting the Queen about to step into a muddy puddle, Raleigh famously laid down his expensive cloak for her to walk over, a gesture of chivalry that captured Elizabeth's attention and favour. From establishing the first English colony in the New World to seeking the fabled City of Gold, Raleigh's expeditions to the Americas were driven by a blend of personal ambition and nationalistic fervour. He dreamt of an empire on which the sun would never set, and in many ways he laid the foundations for what the British Empire would eventually become. But life at court is as much about peril as it is about prestige. As Raleigh's influence grew, so did the number of his enemies. The rise of James I to the throne marked the beginning of Raleigh's decline. Accused of conspiring against the king in the main plot, Raleigh found himself imprisoned within the cold, unforgiving walls of the Tower of London in 1603. It's here that we find the heart of our tale. While many within the tower despaired, Raleigh channeled his energies into writing. The confines of his cell saw the creation of the history of the world, a testament to his intellect and indefatigable spirit. Yet the physical confinement weighed heavily upon him. Guards and prisoners alike would often hear the rhythmic pacing of Raleigh's boots echoing through the stone corridors, the sound of a restless mind trapped in a restless body. Years turned into more than a decade. Raleigh's cell became a world within a world, an empire of thought and memory. It said that the ghosts of his past adventures, the whispering winds of the Americas, and the lapping waves of distant uncharted shores would visit him during the long, lonely nights. In 1616, Raleigh was released to embark on one final expedition to Venezuela in search of El Dorado, the mythical city of gold. The expedition was a disaster, leading to the death of his son and confrontations with the Spanish, who were angered by his expedition's breach of the peace treaty between Spain and England. Upon his return to England, Spanish pressure and Raleigh's own diminishing favour led to his execution on charges of treason in 1618. With unparalleled dignity, Raleigh met his end, even going so far as to jest with the executioner about the sharpness of the axe. But while Sir Walter Raleigh's earthly journey ended on that fateful day, many claim his spirit remains restless. Visitors and guards of the tower speak of a spectral figure endlessly pacing the battlements and the quarters where Raleigh was once imprisoned. Soft murmurs of poetry, the distant echo of sea shanties, and the unmistakable scent of tobacco, which Raleigh popularized in England, accompany this apparition. It's as if Raleigh, ever the explorer, is still seeking something. Perhaps redemption, perhaps another adventure, or perhaps just peace. His story, with its grand exploits and tragic downfall, is emblematic of the volatile nature of courtly favour and the perilous dance between ambition and fate. When one stands in the tower, especially near Raleigh's former quarters, one can't help but feel the weight of history, the passions, dreams, and tragedies of those who came before. Sir Walter Raleigh, with his eternal pacing, serves as a haunting reminder of the thin line between glory and oblivion. The Tower of London, with its towering battlements and spiral turrets, is a vast repository of tales, but few places within its walls are as enigmatic as the Salt Tower. It stands, not just as a physical fortification, but as a monument to faith, resistance, and the silent cries of those persecuted. In the midst of Henry VIII's turbulent reign, England saw seismic shifts in its religious fabric. The king's break from the Roman Catholic Church ushered in a period of Protestant ascendancy, and what followed was a brutal campaign against those who resisted this new order. Monasteries were dissolved, their wealth confiscated, and monks who did not conform found themselves branded as enemies of the state. The Salt Tower became the unwilling host to many of these devout men, stripped of their sanctuaries and torn from the quiet rhythm of monastic life. They were thrust into the cold, damp confines of this tower. But within these walls, amidst the adversity and the darkness, shone the indomitable spirit of human faith. One of the most poignant tales from this era is that of a group of Carthusian monks, men of profound spiritual commitment, who, having refused to acknowledge Henry as the head of the Church of England, found themselves imprisoned within the Salt Tower. Here they were subjected to severe conditions, given minimal food, and often chained in excruciating positions as a cruel method of persuasion. Despite their suffering, these monks found solace in their unwavering faith. Etched onto the walls of their cells are intricate inscriptions, biblical verses, and symbols of devotion. And symbols of devotion, a testament to their spiritual resilience. The Salt Tower's walls bear witness to their quiet defiance, with one inscription reading, "Be faithful unto death, and I will give you the crown of life." Yet for many, the physical and mental torment proved too much. Many monks met their end within this tower, their souls departing with prayers on their lips, their spirits bolstered by the conviction of their beliefs. Legend has it that as dusk turns to night and the tower's long shadows meld with the darkness, the spectral figures of these monks can be seen. They move with a serene grace, their ghostly habits flowing, candles of ethereal light illuminating their path. They're said to chant in harmonious whispers, their voices rising and falling with the wind, filling the cold air with echoes of ancient Latin prayers. Many visitors have reported feeling an overwhelming sense of peace in their presence, a stark contrast to the tales of anguish and despair that the tower often evokes. These spiritual apparitions, rather than instilling fear, bring with them a message of hope and perseverance. They serve as a poignant reminder that even in the darkest times, the human spirit, fortified by faith and belief, can shine brightly. One particularly chilling account comes from a night guard, who, while on his rounds, was said to have stumbled upon a group of these spectral monks conducting a silent mass within the Salt Tower. For a moment, time seemed to stand still as he watched, enraptured by the scene before him. Then, as the ghostly liturgy came to an end, the figures slowly faded away, leaving behind only the cold stillness of the night. The legacy of the Salt Tower's ghostly monks is more than just a tale of the supernatural. It's a story of resistance, of the lengths individuals will go to defend their beliefs and their way of life. It speaks to the enduring power of faith and the human capacity to find light, even in the most trying circumstances. Today, as one stands before the Salt Tower, it's hard not to feel the weight of its history, the sacrifices made within its walls, and the spirit of those who once called it their unwilling home. For as long as the Tower of London stands, the Salt Tower will remain a beacon, not of fear, but of faith. Not of oppression, but of resilience, not of death, but of life everlasting. In the intricate web of Tudor and Stuart lineage, few figures spark as much intrigue as the tragic Lady Arbella Stuart. Born into a world of royal blood and political machinations, her life was a dance on the precipice of destiny, one that eventually led to her sad incarceration within the Tower of London. Arbella was the granddaughter of Margaret Tudor, Henry VIII's older sister. This connection to the Tudors meant she was often considered a viable successor to Queen Elizabeth I. From birth, this royal connection was both her blessing and her curse. It placed her at the center of numerous plots and schemes, with various factions seeking to use her as a pawn in their games for the English throne. As a child, she lived a relatively secluded life, shielded from the intrigues of court. But with the death of Elizabeth I and the ascension of James I, Arbella's position became precarious. As a potential alternative to the Stuart claim, she was seen both as a threat and an opportunity. But Arbella was more than just her royal blood. She was an intellectual known for her sharp wit, love for literature, and her remarkable correspondence with prominent figures of the day. However, she was not simply content to be a pawn in the political games of men. She had desires, ambitions, and dreams of her own. One such dream was to find love and companionship, which she believed she found in William Seymour, another claimant to the throne. The two shared a forbidden romance, marrying in secret in 1610. When their clandestine union was discovered, it was deemed a threat to the crown, a potential rallying point for those dissatisfied with James I's rule. Both were arrested, with Arbella being imprisoned in the Tower of London. The weight of her lineage and the choices she had made confined her to these ancient walls, far from the one she loved. The Tower, which had stood as the backdrop to so many chapters of her family's history, now bore witness to her despair. Rumours and whispers spread of her melancholy. She refused food, her health declined, and her once vibrant spirit dimmed. Guards spoke of hearing her melancholic cries in the dead of night, her voice echoing through the corridors, a lament for lost love and freedom. Yet, even in her despair, Arbella plotted. There were whispers of escape plans, of secret messages passed to and from the tower, but destiny was not on her side. Her health deteriorated rapidly, and in September 1615, the tower claimed another victim, as Lady Arbella Stuart passed away, a life of promise cut tragically short. However, many believed that her spirit never left. Within the hallowed walls of the tower, countless visitors have reported hearing haunting screams echoing, an ethereal sound that chills the bone. They speak of a ghostly figure of a woman dressed in period garb, her face etched with sorrow, roaming the rooms where Arbella was once imprisoned. The screaming spectre of Arbella Stuart, as she came to be known, became one of the tower's most infamous phantoms. Her spectral presence is a poignant reminder of the personal costs of political ambition, the sacrifices made in the name of power, and the indomitable human spirit that, even in death, refuses to be silenced. Lady Arbella's tale is a tragic one, but it also serves as a testament to the resilience of the human heart. She loved fiercely, lived passionately, and though her life was marked by confinement and tragedy, her spirit remains an indelible part of the tower's rich tapestry of history. Through her ethereal cries, she reminds us of the personal stories behind the political machinations, of the lives forever altered by the whims of power. In the heart of London, as the River Thames ebbs and flows, the tower stands as a sentinel to history, and within its walls, the spirit of Lady Arbella Stuart continues her eternal lament, a haunting melody of love, loss, and longing. In the heart of the historic grounds of the Tower of London lies a remarkable building that has stood witness to centuries of royal dramas and mysteries, the Queen's House. Set amidst the tapestry of aged stones and echoing footsteps of the past, it harbors stories whispered softly into the annals of time, with one figure casting a long, spectral shadow amidst its corridors, the enigmatic lady in white. The Queen's House stands as a monument of time, an embodiment of various eras, with its foundations dating back to the medieval period. Over the centuries, it metamorphosed, encapsulating the Tudor, Stuart, and Georgian architectural elements, reflecting the complex narrative of the times it has seen. The building breathes history, each brick a silent witness to countless tales of joy, sorrow, betrayal, and love. In the vibrant canvas of history, a solitary figure emerges with a poignancy that lingers in the corners of the Queen's house. A figure clothed in white, who has been glimpsed through windows in moonlit nights, her presence an enigmatic blend of grace and sadness. She is the Lady in White, a spectral entity woven deeply into the narratives of the Queen's house, an apparition tethered to love and loss, bound by the inexorable chains of time. Her origins are steeped in mystery, yet theories abound. Some believe she might be Anne Boleyn, whose tragic life and death left an indelible mark on the Tower's history. Others suggest she might be a mourning bride, a figure from one of the many layers of history that the Queen's house has absorbed over the centuries. Her presence in the house is almost poetic, her sightings accompanied by the gentle fragrance of lavender, a soothing balm to the soul amidst the backdrop of the tumultuous history encapsulated within these stone walls. Her movements are serene, almost ethereal, weaving through the rooms with a grace that belies the weight of her tragic tale. Visitors have recounted their encounters with the Lady in White, describing her as a gentle presence, one that instills a sense of peace amidst the walls echoing with whispers of the past. She is often seen near the windows, gazing longingly into the distance, as if waiting for someone, her heart reaching across the spans of time and fate. There are stories that she has been glimpsed wandering the gardens, a lonely figure amidst the vibrant blossoms, a vivid contrast to the bustling life that surrounds her. In the moonlit night, she is a haunting vision of love lost and yearnings unfulfilled, a living tapestry of human emotions that transcend time. As we delve deeper into the heart of the narrative, we cannot overlook the intricate relationship the Lady in White has with the Queen's house itself. It is as if the building embraces her, a sanctuary where her spirit finds solace, where her story finds a voice. The walls echo her silent cries, her unseen tears and her invisible smiles, weaving her essence into a rich narrative tapestry that captivates every visitor. Through her lingering presence, the Queen's house transcends its role as a mere building. It becomes a living entity, a bridge between the realms of the living and the dead, offering a glimpse into the depths of human emotions and the mysteries that lie beyond the veil of death. It stands as a testament to the enduring power of love, a beacon of hope that love transcends time, binding souls across the chasms of death and separation. As the final chapter in our narrative, the Lady in White and the Queen's house offer a poignant conclusion to our journey through the Tower of London's rich history. Through her spectral presence, we are reminded of the complexities of human existence, of the intertwining of joy and sorrow, love and loss, life and death. As we stand before the Queen's house, under the ethereal glow of the moon, we find ourselves touched by the timeless embrace of history, connected through the ages by the threads of human stories woven intricately into the fabric of time itself. In the presence of the Lady in White, we find a silent promise that even in death, love endures, whispering softly to our souls, echoing through the corridors of time, leaving an everlasting imprint upon the heart of history. The Tower of London, with its towering stone walls and solemn battlements, stands as a testament to the passage of time, a sentinel that has borne witness to England's tumultuous history for nearly a millennium. As our journey through its haunting tales and tragic narratives draws to a close, we are left with an impression, a fusion of historical fact interwoven with whispered legends. From its very inception, the Tower was destined to be a unique tapestry of power and tragedy, born as a symbol of Norman might and determination. It quickly became the heart of a nation's evolving tale. Every stone, every archway, every darkened corner reflects a moment, a face, a story. The Tower does not simply chronicle the history of monarchs and battles, politics and treachery. It mirrors the very soul of a nation, the collective heartbeat of its people, the intertwining threads of joy, ambition, love, betrayal and sorrow. Over the centuries, as monarchs rose and fell, as dynasties changed and the world outside its walls transformed, the Tower's role morphed, from royal residence to prison, from treasury to place of execution. It has been both the stage and the actor in the great drama that is England's history. And, like all great actors, it wears its role seamlessly, morphing from one to the other, collecting stories and memories like precious jewels. The Tower's haunting tales, those of spectral queens and lonely princesses, of ghostly monks and tortured souls, offer us a window, not just into the supernatural, but into the very heart of humanity. For these tales are born out of power struggles, ambitions that knew no bounds, love stories that defied conventions, and the depths of human despair. They serve as poignant reminders that behind every historical event, behind every decision of kings and queens, are real human stories, stories that resonate with emotions we all feel. And while some of these tales tread the line between fact and legend, their impact remains undiminished. For isn't history itself a blend of fact and interpretation, of events and the tales we weave around them? In the shadows of the Tower, fact and legend meld, creating narratives more potent than either alone. But as we reflect on these tales, let us not forget the silent storyteller, the Tower itself. Its walls have absorbed the hopes, dreams, fears, and tears of countless souls, and though these walls do not speak in words, they communicate in a language more profound. They speak in the silent footsteps that echo in empty hallways, in the gentle rustling of leaves in moonlit gardens, in the distant tolling of a bell, in the cold touch of a shadow as it brushes past. The Tower reminds us that while history is made of events, it is remembered for its stories. And as the world outside changes, as new chapters are added to the annals of history, the Tower will stand holding within its embrace the echoes of a nation's soul. Generations will come and go, but the Tower's allure will remain timeless. The pull of its tales, the intrigue of its mysteries, the desire to touch a part of history will draw many to its gates. And as they walk its grounds, they too will become a part of its narrative, a whisper in its ever-evolving tale. The Tower of London serves as a poignant reminder of the impermanence of power and the enduring nature of stories. It is a symbol of the delicate balance between the past, the present, and the future. And while its stones may remain silent, the memories they hold, the tales they have witnessed, will continue to intrigue, inspire, and mystify for generations to come. For in its silent watch, the Tower is not just a keeper of history, it is history itself. He was an explorer, poet, courtier, and spy. His life was an intricate tapestry woven with threads of ambition, curiosity, love, and eventually, despair. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Saving Castles podcast. Stay tuned for our next episode where we'll continue to explore the fascinating world of castles and chateaus. Don't miss out and subscribe to our podcast to get notified when new episodes are released. For more information about us and our work, visit savingcastles.com. Thank you for listening.